Good morning, and welcome to the Home Power Hour. Bringing the hope of sustainability to our terminal culture.
Give us hope! Give us hope!
I'm Solar Jim. I'm here with Sustainable Jack.
Hello, everybody!
And we're broadcasting from your community radio station in downtown Carrboro.
From Studio Zero.
Zero, 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 zero. 100 watts of free speech blasting from the heart of downtown Carrboro. And on the internet,
woohoo!
At communityradio.coop.
And from our webpage, www.homepowerhour.com.
That's right. Because we just can't get enough of it. We want to hear about the good ideas that are going on in renewable energy, solar, wind, and micro hydro technology, energy efficiency, bicycles.
Gotta pedal up that hill, folks.
Almost 2 million e-bikes in China. Heard that on the NPR this morning. E-bikes are catching on big in China.
What's an e-bike?
Well, it's an electric assist bicycle. We have a little battery and a little button, and you can get a little help going up hills. E-bikes. This is a call-in show, too, so you can call us at 919-929-9601.
Hey, if somebody wanted to call us, Solar Jim, what number would they use?
919-929-9601. Woo! And let us know how your Thanksgiving went. Were you trying to feed your whole family on an off-grid solar power system? Hoping the lights didn't go out?
Did you cook using a solar oven?
Or did you let the wind blow and generate electricity for you? Had a windy day that day, so those of you with small-scale wind turbines were making the kilowatt hours.
Those blades just going round and round and round.
That's right, they're pretty quiet. But when that Jenny starts to furl at 30 miles an hour, you can hear a little noise. Yes, there's millions of solutions out there, putting the pieces together for the Ecozoic era.
That's right. With news, sports, and weather, it's the Home Power Hour!
Woo!
Oh, my, that just... so wonderful feeling to get these things started up. You know what they said this morning when I got up and I turned on the weather? And they said, abundant sunshine!
It is so clear out there today.
It is so gorgeous. It's just wonderful stuff.
There's just not much to get between us and our primary reactor, the sun. Bringing us energy from 94 million miles away. But now... let's hear the headlines from around the world about renewable energy, see what's going on with our own Sustainable Jack.
Here's the headline. All life on Earth depends on the sun!
Wow.
That's the biggest headline we have right there, beginning of the day. Hey, wind power is helping Texas move past oil. Texas, a long traditional home of the oil industry in the U.S., has begun to make its presence felt in the renewable energy market as well. In the year 2007, more than 1 gigawatt of wind energy capacity has been installed in Texas.
Yeah, they're no fools. They got a head start on the rest of the country, too.
That's true. And there have been people looking how to turn fecal waste from cows, horses, pigs, and other livestock in energy, primarily using anaerobic digestion.
It's manure to energy.
Kilowatts from cow pies. A report from the Government Accountability Office comparing federal electricity subsidies by fuel type shows that renewables such as wind only get a small share of the overall subsidies awarded to the energy chapter. China's richest man, according to Forbes magazine, 2006 annual list of billionaires, is the CEO of solar cell producer SunTech Power Holdings.
Wow. Boy, China moves right ahead there.
That's right. That's where the next bill... No, we won't say that. Today, typical geothermal wells are about 2.5 kilometers in depth, producing steam at about 300 degrees Celsius and generating about 4 to 7 megawatts of electricity. However, in Iceland, they have projects to go nearly twice as deep. And that's the news today on All Things Renewable. From Studio Zero in downtown Carrboro, you're listening to the Home Power Hour.
Those folks in Iceland, you know, they're so good. They were trying to do the hydrogen economy before anybody else.
That's right. Of course, it's really simple because they have one major road that goes along the, the west, south, and then a little bit to the east along, skirting the Iceland. However, they're losing glaciers and they're gaining land.
Oh. Well, they've got a lot of geothermal stuff. I'm surprised they had to drill so deep to get their...
Well, they wanted those higher temperatures.
Mm-hmm. That superheated steam.
That's right.
So Yellowstone Park, they've got a lot of accessible geothermal energy.
Boy, do they. They're living on top of one of the largest...
The largest shield volcanoes in the world.
Yeah.
And it's swelling up right now.
Yep, they've noticed that the little coastline of some of the lakes there is shifting a bit as the bottom is changing on that shield you mentioned.
It's like some 37 cubic kilometers of magma just came up underneath there and bulged the whole landscape up a few centimeters. Yeah.
Always bringing you the good news here on the Hope Power
Hour. Could be a little more geothermal energy than you're interested in handling. Right.
Oh man, I tell you, it seems like it's been forever since we got behind the magic microphones here at WCOM.
Last week we were in a can.
Yeah.
Like Prince Albert. Let me out.
Do you have SJ in a can?
I'm around the world. It's the Home Power. Would you please move your elbows in my eye?
No, but I did hear that China is just like going full tilt on this electric bike thing.
Man, that's just so cool.
You can get them for a couple hundred bucks. I mean, it's like $300 or $400 you can have them.
You know, my family's had electric bikes since '99.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing. And I've, with teaching, et cetera, we've have no idea how many of these bikes and stuff that we've done. So, they're probably in the dozens now that students have built and have ridden successfully, and it's something else to get on a bicycle and not pedal and not have any sound.
Mm-hmm.
It's like coasting all the time.
I thought it was just going to take over the regular bike, because you can still pedal.
There's some really interesting research that was done by this that students have looked at. I mean, we can go back all the way to Paul McGreedy on this. Paul McGreedy, one of the engineers, innovators of the century, who held all types of flying records with gliders and whatnot.
Oh, wow.
And then he came into the public eye when he got the prize for flying. No, it's not that. It's a very clean public eye. But when he did the first human-powered aircraft.
Flew right into the public eye.
That's right. Flew around in a nice little
eight. Was that the thing that went across the channel?
That was the second one called the
Albatross?
Albatross. The first one was called the Gossamer Condor. Mm-hmm. And it was pedal-powered. And I was talking to a group of people last night about it. He said that, he was not an aeronautical engineer as such, but he said, most of the aircraft of that time that were being designed for human power were being built by geniuses in the aeronautics industry. And he said he couldn't compete with them, but he noticed something very odd when they built. He said they would build this aircraft, and it was just perfect aerodynamically, et cetera, but it would fly and land kind of hard and break, and there went the project. And so he changed his whole mind on how to do this project. First of all, he assumed a friend's debt and got several tens of thousands of dollars in debt. And then he looked around and saw the MacCready Prize at $100,000 and said, I'll take it. So he designed a system that would, as he said, would be broken every day and repairable. Every day there would be a new aircraft.
This is the Gossamer...
This is the Gossamer Condor. Mm-hmm. And so it had Hershey bar wings, as they call it. The wings were identical, the whole length of them. So that his students could sit there with, foam core board and drill it out and make those over and over again. It was covered with very thin plastic. And then it used piano wire, to take some of the tensile strength. And the idea was that his philosophy, which is an interesting philosophy for somebody up in an airplane, is make it just good enough. Just good enough was the working philosophy there. And if it didn't break, it was too heavy. So they were always drilling things out, making them lighter and lighter. He had calculated that he would need like a hang glider of that time, only three times bigger, but the same weight, so human power could power it. And this aircraft could take off at 10 miles per hour, and it would be flying along. And so they would follow it with bicycles and talk to the pilot, tell them faster.
So he pedaled and it drove a propeller or something?
And it drove a propeller. And the bicyclists who were experiencing this, and of course they flew it every day. So everybody on the crew, even his kids, got to fly this aircraft.
Wow.
So it had the most flight time of any aircraft that was human powered. He easily mounted that just with this project. But the secret was make it just good enough so that if it broke, that night, they could basically rebuild the aircraft. Mm-hmm. And they learned a lot and, made adjustments fore and aft and left to right and found out what
to build a prototype, break it, and build it again.
That's the way
you learn. That's the way
and,
you learn.
And he said the engineers couldn't understand that. They wanted to get it right the first time. And he said there was just too much stuff to learn. And the only way to learn it was to actually be flying.
Yeah, look at nature.
So that's right. It takes them lots of time to figure out, what things are.
Still trying to figure out what went wrong with the human species.
Well, Jay Baldwin, came up with a wonderful thing. He was in a design class at the University of Michigan.
Yeah.
This is Jay Baldwin of Bucky Wooks.
Buckyminster Fuller, yeah.
Yeah.
Fame.
And he said he was listening to a professor who said, that... design is the art of compromise, et cetera. And he looked out at a pelican, and he went, a pelican is not a redesigned crow. A pelican is a pelican, and over the years, it's been designed to be the best pelican it can be. And, what doesn't work doesn't last. And in nature, these niches that are filled so eloquently with all these different species, there's a reason for all that.
And it's a balance and
he said that was really, really good design. He says, one of the evidence of good designs is that you just it just looks right.
Looks obvious, yeah.
Yeah, and it's not always apparent what's going on there. The design can be a little bit frivolous. We have all this sexual mating stuff and all types of creatures, and they've incredible displays. I was in Quito, Ecuador, this weekend, and just took a little quick jog down there. But I was at they call the Ecuadorian rose one of the best roses in the world, and it's just incredible the varieties that they have bred of these roses, and With and without thorns, short stems, long stems, thick stems.
These are the ones we see on street corners and 5-gallon buckets?
Well, no. These are the more, hey, I love you so much, I gave you a dozen roses. We're not eating this month because of that. Those types of flowers.
Oh, I see.
Really, really nice
high-end stuff.
High-end stuff. But, this design that we're talking about, it's just incredible. So, houses, wind turbines, solar arrays, all of these things are designed for function, and when they function just so well, they look so good.
Oh, yeah. Transparency.
It's like that Proven wind turbine that you like and I like so much. It looks kind of goofy when you're right up against it, but when you see it in the wind and it's doing what it's supposed to do, it is a gorgeous thing.
How else could it be? Yeah, there were some funky bicycles when they first came out. Those big wheels and tiny wheels. And
they were functional in their time until people found, this is a... I remember they came up with a safety bicycle, which meant you didn't have to fall very far from it when you fell over.
A pillow tied on either hip. That's a safety bicycle.
So it's amazing. But these electric bicycles that we started off about, they should be taking over. They're quiet, they're elegant, and I had another student who's calculated the energy use, and that's where I was going with the aircraft. A human powered aircraft, we're only making maybe 100 watts continuously if you're a really good bicyclist. And so
you can kick out a little peak of maybe 300 watts for a moment. Then there's Lance.
Yeah, and then
the Armstrong hour.
That's right.
But a lot more than we have.
That's a small motor, a small electric motor. You can easily hold it in your fist. In fact, when they did the human power, it came on to MacCready that they could do an electric aircraft, and they used a motor based off of a radio-controlled aircraft.
Mm.
It was that small, and turning a big, huge 8-foot diameter prop at a very slow speed, but it was enough to get them airborne and to make them fly. I can see it in your eyes. They're already spinning over there in Solar Jim's background. They're going, yeah.
I could build the hangar.
It's
we come out with
it doesn't take much of a motor, and they were doing it with lead acid batteries, and of course we got some really good answers to lead acid batteries today. So it is amazing to me.
Well, there's been some big things that flew in the past. We had the Quetzalcoatl is one of the pterosaurs, that the prehistoric flying reptiles. And it had like a 45-foot wingspan. It was like a small plane. I mean, these things were huge.
Yeah, and they're still trying to figure out, could they actually take off? And, of course,
they did something.
They had to.
It'd be pretty silly to look like that and not fly. Hey, I've got some big wings here. But, man. Yeah, those, when can we get those e-bikes?
Well, they're available over the internet, and so just Google e-bike or electric bikes.
There's scooters, and there's a Segway, and there's a tremendous amounts of varieties of go-karts. You got that little electric go-kart.
Yeah, I'm strong believer in that. What you play with as a kid is what you kind of desire as an adult. And we've had a generation now almost of kids who've been driving electric-powered vehicles.
Well,
it's toys.
You know what I hate is those electric little vehicles that you can get in, the kids in, and they still have the gas tank on them. They have the plastic like gas tank, and I'm like, this is an electric vehicle.
Oh man,
why is it disguised as a gas guzzler?
Yeah, we ought to have the Tesla. And that should be this year's Christmas.
A toy Tesla. Burn rubber, not oil.
That's right. They'd have to sit there and burn rubber all the way up to 4 miles per hour.
For Christmas, that's what I want.
Really?
That's just $100,000 now, right? You can get your own
Tesla
Roadster.
You can get your own Tesla toy for just that small amount of money.
Oh, well, Christmas is just around the corner.
It is, and I've just put on some Christmas music. How about that? All right! Santa is out to get me.
So the new LED lights are out.
That's right. You better get them on your Christmas tree quick, because Santa will get out to get you, too. I can't believe this.
I saw a fabulous box of Philips LED lights. It was 19 feet long, had a bunch of lights on it,
uh-huh.
And it was like $12, $13. And these were had nice reflectors, had little icicly diffusers on them.
Mm-hmm.
And they were bright. And these things were bright. And the price has come down a lot on those LED Christmas lights this year. I think they've
for Christmas, you know,
really matured.
You should be finding some other alternative to the Christmas tree so we can save those trees. Although there's a lot of people depending on you buying them this year.
Well, what I've done before is to go in the woods and get a dead cedar tree.
Ah.
And then bring it in and wrap the lights on it.
Was it green?
No.
No, it was a brown tree.
Yeah, twigs, you know. It's okay. Kind of goth. But once you, like, wrap it with the
grape... You can put a green LED light on it.
Grapevines and things like that. I was able to hang more Christmas ornaments, more historical ornaments on that, you know, bare tree than even on a green one. It had more places to hang things on. And it looked great from outside. You had the same shape lit up and lights and everything.
Merry Christmas, Charlie Brown!
Well, this tree is dead.
I got a rock. For all those kids that want those Tesla Roadsters. From that really hairy uncle of yours, it's a little bit strange. This is the first song he'll put in the CD player of that car.
Smoking lightning,
heavy metal thunder,
racing with the wind.
Woo!
And the feeling that I'm under.
Yeah, I gotta go make it happen. Take the world in a loving embrace. Fire all of your guns at once and explode into space. Like a true nature's child, we were born. We can climb so high, I never wanna die. Born to be wild. Born to be wild.
Talking to some of my fellow professors up at UNC Asheville in the environmental program. They started trying to figure out how big was their carbon footprint.
Well, that's a good thing for the environmental program to
figure
out.
That's right. And what was really frightening to them, though, is they did the standard looking at stuff. And as they looked at the buildings and they looked at the water and they looked at all these other, you know, structure things that make up a campus, mm-hmm. and the lights and even in some of the activities, you know, like athletic events.
Oh, it's complicated.
Then somebody said, what about all the people coming on the campus? They looked out the window and there's, you know, 60% of the campus is devoted to the care and feeding of the automobile,
mm-hmm.
not nurturing the minds of the students.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they looked out there, they saw that, you know, there's all this area devoted to parking, all these metal monsters there, and they realized that their carbon footprint was much, much bigger than they thought, because people drove on and off campus every day.
Even in a Prius, you still got a footprint.
It'll take you a little bit longer to run out of a gallon of fuel, but you will run out of a gallon of fuel eventually. And of course, for every gallon, there's 21 pounds of carbon dioxide that's been put into the air.
That was the irony of the back to nature movement, going out into the country and building your, you know, off-grid home and then driving to work, you know, farther.
To pay for it.
Farther away.
Yeah, and, you know, cars, these are enormous. I was really struck by my little trip this past weekend to Ecuador, and yeah, here's something for Americans to know. Ecuador pays less than $1 a gallon for gas. $1 a gallon.
Hmm.
And we know that because Ecuador's currency is the American dollar. So that just blew me away. And then I found out, oh, Ecuador produces 300,000 barrels of oil a day.
Mm-hmm. And that ain't gasoline, though.
And that's not gasoline. But it works out to less than, you know, like a half a gallon of gasoline per Ecuadorian a day. Whereas in the United States, we're doing about 3.2 gallons average per person per day.
That means they're refining their own oil, too.
Yeah, so that means the average American is responsible in just transportation alone for about 75 pounds of carbon dioxide in the air. Well, doesn't sound like much, but
70 pounds per day? No, per
day.
Per day?
Because do the math here. It's 21 pounds of carbon dioxide per gallon times 3.3. It's about 75 pounds
of coal of
carbon dioxide.
Carbon dioxide. Right. Well,
remember, because when you make carbon dioxide, you get two parts of oxygen out of the atmosphere, and then one part carbon, and so that's just part of the combustion process.
It adds up fast. Those carbon molecules are heavy.
And, it's so amazing to me. You know, people go, well, there's only minute quantities of carbon dioxide in the air. You know, it's somewhere around 280 was the norm, and we're going about 330 parts per million. That's really tiny. And, well, yeah, it's really tiny, but all of life, depends, uses carbon dioxide and, trees and plants taking that up and through photosynthesis and drawing up water, they construct themselves out of it. And we depend on all of that. It's very small parts per million, but that means that, when you go from 280 to 330.
That's a big percentage.
That's a huge percentage increase. And it's changing things.
Yeah. We got to get our mind around that,
It's kind of hard to get your mind around that. I mean, there was a Science News article I read, and it just kind of brought back some stuff when I was a kid, back in the 60s and 70s. Evidence was pointing that we were going toward an ice age. The Earth has, changed
oscillates
into more of a...
in and out of those ice ages.
That's right, into an elliptical orbit, which tends to lead to an ice age. And so they're saying, we're coming ice age, et cetera. And so that means that, this warming trend in a quote-unquote ice age is pretty doggone significant. So I'm not sure, it's an ice age and the ice is melting. We've really...
We're in an enigma age.
We're in the enigma age. Hey, that's a good one for it. it's mankind has decided he's not going to have the ice age. I'm going to stay warm. we've come up with all these methods of keeping ourselves in this type of situation.
Yeah, just keep swimming. Keep swimming, too. I heard this great comment about microbes that live on the surface of our bodies. We have all these bacteria and viruses and tiny parasites and things all over us, billions of these things. And you can actually describe the human body as a microplanet with different habitats on it, all those little critters swimming around in your teeth and your gums and your digestive system. So we are a microplanet. And, they probably wonder whether we're conscious or not. Is the planet we're on conscious of what's going on? When we have an eruption or something, is it just to punish those little microbes?
Solar Jim runs off into his own universe.
I am my own planet. The gym theory. How would I communicate to my planetary dezens if I wanted to?
Yes, questions of theology on the Home Power Hour.
I'm shutting it.
The universe is made of billions of stars and two hard-boiled eggs. Make that one hard-boiled, one scrambled.
Well, this accounting for traffic, this is big. I mean, people pumping up the tires on their car, driving less, and getting an energy-efficient car. Those are some of the big choices you can make.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, one of my students, oh, boy, we just have students coming out the ears today, but, you know, calculated, if you did everything you were supposed to do, you'd get about 250% more miles per gallon. And I went, what? He says, well, you know, if your tires are flat, your efficiency goes way, way down. Mm-hmm. And I went, okay. He says, if your air cleaners are dirty, the engine will barely run. It burns a lot more fuel. And I went, okay. And he just kept going down, you know, these things. If
unnecessary
your fuel cleaners,
weight, you know,
all these things. And he calculated out. He says, you know, if we did all this, we get 250 times, you know, 250% more, da-da-da. And I went, now, wait a minute. You know, one of these things, it's just like, you know, if I don't get out of bed, I can't walk type stuff. But it's true. There's so many things that can go wrong that can stop you as a vehicle. But that doesn't necessarily, you know, I'm now a vehicle. I can move forward. It doesn't improve your efficiency all that much. My favorite thing is, you know, I know how to make a Hummer get as good a gas mileage as a Prius.
Well, leave it parked.
Leave it parked. Yeah. So.
What about a cardboard air diffuser on the back of your car? If you just built something that, like, let the air spoil off the back of the vehicle in a more aerodynamically correct, shouldn't somebody say if our cars would be more aerodynamic if we drove them backwards?
Yeah, Buckminster Fuller did that, and he proved it. His Dymaxion automobile.
Oh yeah, the hot dog.
Got like three times the mileage efficiency of the car it was based on, which was a Model A Ford. And it was almost all aerodynamics.
It was like in the 30s or 40s?
Yeah, it was in the 1930s.
Wow.
Or 1920s, somewhere in the late
20s, early 30s. That Dymaxion, it was cool as heck. It could pull into a parking place sideways.
Yeah, and
turn on a dime.
Had enormous travel in its suspension where the cabin was concerned.
And it could have a bunch of people in there.
And front-wheel drive. Mm-hmm. And rear-wheel steering.
Had like room for 6 or 7 or 10 or something.
That's right. And the body was made like an airplane.
Those were gotten rid of pretty fast. The existing Dymaxions. Is there one around now? The Dymaxion cars?
Let's run that one by again. In the Bucky Works book.
I've seen a picture of one.
There's a picture of him in the 1970s with a Dymaxion in front of his bug-eye dome.
Mm-hmm. I've seen a picture of one driving around a policeman who was directing traffic. And it does a donut around him within inches. It was really quite amazing. I was at a dinner party the other day, and a woman...
Oh, hold it. Yes, we have the music of them driving the Dymaxion vehicle around the policeman. There was a piano, a Steinway, inside the Dymaxion vehicle.
Aluminum.
That's right. I couldn't afford the strings of the woodwinds.
That's Bucky leaning out the window.
That's right.
Dymaxion car coming through.
It's the Dymaxion car. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, the Dymaxion car. Thank you very much. Hey, you know what can you do today to reduce the amount of transportation that you have to deal with?
Well, I was in a discussion with a friend at a party the other night, and she's working on a mathematical formula to quantify the transportation footprint that she leaves.
Now who could this friend be?
This is Libby Searles.
Ah, this is Libby, the Libby Searles of our previous episode,
who uses like 2-3 kilowatt hours a day in
Wow.
a modern home.
That's right. And she had very interesting ways of financing that as a business, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and sells all of her solar power to 7 kilowatt hours a day to the NC Green Power.
And if you go to our archives, you can find her up there probably at the first of the year of this year that we interviewed her. She talked about the tax situation that allowed her to do that, and she got online. So she has taken pencil to paper and gotten that creative mind.
She's a mathematical whiz, and she's done these formulas. So she was saying, well, when you take on your first carpool person, a passenger, you know, you actually
double.
You double your efficiency.
Wow.
And then when you take on your next one, though, it's a smaller percentage, but you get better. So there's
66% better.
So there's you know, there's low hanging fruit. You can move forwards on efficiency really fast, and then the last bit is harder and harder to get. But she started calculating everything. When her daughter is given a ride by somebody else, she has to count that on her family energy bill. Mm-hmm. So they started. It just really became apparent to her. She started combining trips. You know, I'm going to go here and drop somebody off, pick somebody else up, and she actually was getting points for moving around her neighbor's kids. So she was actually recruiting riders in her vehicle. And her father wanted to bring over a load of mulch, but she would count that on her accounting process.
Right.
And she didn't want him to bring it over. She's like, "We're going to be over there in 3 days. We'll bring the truck and we'll load it up and then bring it back. And that'll, you know, I won't be penalized so much for that. But if you just bring over the mulch and drop it off and drive back, that's two trips for this load of mulch when we could actually accomplish the same thing on a visit to your house on a regular day." So it's just fascinating how she was getting down to this, very quantumized thing. She was like, "You really see what it means to take a bicycle to someplace or to walk."
Wow. Wow, and this is...
And she's working out this formula. She said she was going to publish something about it. But
I hope she does.
It's all these division and long math and,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Well, I've been reading a book that's come out from New Society Publishers by Clive Duchette, who's a alderman for the city of Ottawa.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about our highways as high-speed sewers that take us from one... like a dumbbell. He says it takes us from one big concentrated area, high-speed sewer, to another concentrated area. Typically, it's got a big box store in it or something.
Mm, mm-hmm.
And he was talking about how, you know, he grew up loving the city of Ottawa, and he's a poet, and he got elected to the city council.
Mm-hmm. Always a good idea.
And he said, you know, he looked at some of these wonderful boulevards that used to be wonderful with tree-lined streets and lots of sidewalks and... trolley cars that ran along them. And
human people, scale.
It's very human scale. And he said, you know, on the same street, you had a poor neighborhood and you had a rich neighborhood, that, you know, just a block away. And the kids all went to school together. And the difference between them basically might be their clothes, but they still participated in sports. It was a community activity. It says today, city traffic engineers have made this efficient by taking out all the trees, the trolley cars, the sidewalks, and gave it a big 8-lane highway to get everybody out of town to the big box store.
Hmm.
And he said, what's really sad about that is you can't go strolling along the parkways. The houses have gone down in value. They've basically turned the houses and made the, you know, made the side streets the,
yeah,
know, access
area. Yeah, try to cross one of those things, yeah, man. It's a nightmare.
It's really dangerous.
I mean, much less being like an animal
then, of course,
or a deer.
People getting hurt or, you know, trying to get across the roads.
Oh, the fumes, the particles and the fumes.
But he brought up a thing. He says, you know, these are old neighborhoods. They have they pay the highest in taxes, and their services have not been upgraded. So the average water sewer service is, you know, almost 100 years old, yet they're paying very high prices and taxes so that the city fathers and developers can run lines out into the country for suburban sprawl. And he says they're farther apart, you know, densities were not that high. And so, it takes a lot more to go, even like in a trash truck, for example, downtowns. You only go just a few feet before you hit the next mm-hmm. garbage pickup. Mm-hmm. You get out in some of these new suburban sprawl areas, and it may be a quarter mile between pickups.
Mm.
And it takes time, that takes fuel, that takes service. The average city uses about 20, or Ottawa being an average city, uses about 28%. Of its budget for libraries, parks, everything that we think of that, you know, a city should have is about 28%. The rest is for the care and feeding of the automobile, making it, you know, roadways, how much those cost, expanding them, traffic lights, you know. It was amazing. You see, it costs $4 million a year for taking care of an intersection that has four lanes of traffic crossing each other.
Wow.
You know, with computers and all this other stuff.
It's about the economy. We just got to use the big balance sheet that has all the costs, all the chain of production, and really add these things up. Then it starts to, we can make smart decisions.
Right. I mean, it's revitalizing our communities and revitalizing ourselves.
You know, water, the price of water is so cheap that, you know, we flush our toilets with it and water our yards with potable water.
It's incredible.
If it was really expensive water, everybody'd have their roof water catchment. It'd be like money falling from the sky. Like the sun. That's energy falling from the sky. So stay tuned. After our show today, you'll have Radio In Vivo with Ernie Hood, the science interview show for the Triangle. It's always interesting. And so that'll be going from 11 to 12. You can also find those shows on the website, www.communityradio.coop, and listen to all those interesting guests that he's had over the last couple of years.
The Home Power Hour is underwritten by
ABS,
Alternative Building Systems, found at abs8.com. ABS8 provides high-performance products and designs for cost-effective, tailored solutions to energy conservation, resource efficiency, environmental quality, site integration, water, and indoor air quality buildings.
Alternative Building Systems, AAC, ICF, SIPS.
All of those acronyms mean savings to you.
Well, I got a whole load of compact fluorescent lights free the other day.
All right, I'll buy. How did you do this one?
Jane Sharp. You know Jane? Do you know Jane Sharp?
I've heard of Jane Sharp. She was the lady that passed out those type of light bulbs.
She did,
correct?
Starting in the 80s.
In the 80s.
In the late 80s, she set up a... she found out that people couldn't get compact fluorescent lights. They weren't being sold anywhere. So she took her retirement fund and bought fluorescent lights and a display and a little Geo Metro, and would drive around to all the street fairs and set up a display and sell compact fluorescent lights at cost.
Wow.
Unbelievably righteous woman over there at Carolina Meadows right now. She's,
we can all breathe cleaner because of her.
She's worked a lot on anti-nuclear things, on ending garbage, on recycling at the retirement home she's at. She's been very, very active on the Hall River Festival, working on that too. But she was downsizing over there at the Carolina Meadows and handed me a couple of bins of compact fluorescent lights so I can give those away to other people too.
Oh, wow. That is just so cool.
A true warrior of renewability.
Yes, it's our light bulb music.
I heard a new one about a light bulb.
Uh-oh. All right, let's hear it.
How does the homeschooler change the light bulb? How many homeschoolers?
How many homeschoolers does it take to change a light bulb?
Yes.
All right. I don't know.
Well, first they have to go research Thomas Edison at the library and write a paper on the evolution of the light bulb. And then they actually unscrew the incandescent and put in a compact fluorescent. When they come to the final thing.
Oh my, how many, oh gosh.
There were people out there in off-grid homes giving Thanksgiving celebrations just like everyone else. And I heard about one where the father of this woman just really did not think she was going to be able to survive off-grid. But she built a beautiful house and had a wind turbine and solar power system, and things were just going great. And she had him over for Thanksgiving and cooked the entire meal in a convective oven and with the wind blowing and the sun shining, and had plenty of electricity, and just made him sort of eat his words.
Dear Lord, thank you for our renewable power.
She had an electric knife to cut the turkey with.
Bless our country.
And her father was watching that and looking out the window at the solar panels, and he went, "It's a solar-powered electric turkey cutting knife."
Meanwhile, in another part of the country, across the street, electricity is being squandered. Nope, he doesn't take the holidays off. We're talking about the Phantom Load.
Go ahead. Plug in the antique Christmas lights. 15 watts apiece. Those dastardly new LEDs only use 4 watts per string. The way they heat. Plug them in. Extend them. Light up the world with old Christmas lights. Use the power. Go ahead.
My God, our energy bill is going out the roof. I'm sorry, kids, but there'll be very few presents this year. The cost of electricity just gone up. Darn those power companies. Foiled again. Wait a minute. Who's this person across the street? Look at those pretty lights over there. Hey, Bob?
Yeah, what do you want? What type of lights are those? Are these? These are light-emitting diodes, man. They're cool.
Well, you're putting them all over your house, huh?
No, just on some special scenes for, you know, Christmas. It's my gift to the neighborhood, you know?
Well, your bill's probably gone through the roof, hadn't it?
Hadn't noticed it.
What is happening in our house? Who could be using all this electricity?
What's that thing you've got over there, Bill? It's a timer.
What do you mean?
Well, it turns the lights on after it gets dark, and it runs for, a couple hours and turns itself off. I never have to worry about it.
Where can I find one of those timers?
Down at the store, man.
Thank you.
I'll have to go find someone else to plug in some old Christmas lights. That's more fools out there, though. Maybe on your street.
Hi, Phantom Load. You need help this Christmas season? It looks like there's a lot of things that we can do. How about we leave the lights on all night? I'll tell them that.
Please leave your lights on all night so people who are up at 3 o'clock in the morning can still enjoy your lights.
How about getting that refrigerator back out of the basement and plugging it in so we could keep some of that food fresh for a longer period of time? You know, the old one, the one that burns electricity. How about, use the blender. Blend up a whole bunch of things for Christmas holidays. Cook a lot of food. Is that helping you out, Phantom Love? Merry Christmas, Phantom Load.
Yeah!
Teapot's boiling. Man, it's really amazing. Holidays can be huge energy consumers. I mean, any holiday because
all the frantic driving around for shopping and things like that.
That's one light bulb that's gone out. There we go.
Yeah, the home power crew, they used to do guerrilla efficiency where they'd be in a restaurant and they would have smuggle in a compact fluorescent and unscrew it when nobody was looking and replace an incandescent with it.
I'll have a glass of water, thank you. Yeah, okay.
But
they're now efficient.
You know, what is wealth, really? Wealth is you know, some people think it's money, but actually that it doesn't correlate very well with happiness.
And so let's correlate some things here for happiness. You know, if you have some friends and you're trying to figure out what to give them for this Christmas, maybe you should give them a compact fluorescent light.
Mm-hmm.
Bring light to their world. You know, and they're not that expensive anymore, so it's what? It's a very gentle gift that you can give.
And they got,
that will
they got
save
them that
the
have
money.
Equivalents of 150 watts. I mean, that's just blinding. You can light a whole room with that.
And if they're a really special friend, give them a book to read under the light.
Oh, yeah.
On energy efficiency, renewable power, or something about their future.
Yeah.
You know, like electric bike. And that's another thing. You know, there are electric bikes and there are electric bike kits that are available.
Electric
scooters of all types. Electric cars. Honey, look what I just got you. You know, it'd be wonderful. And you know, LED lights, the Christmas tree lights. My
got my off-road Segway. Yeehaw!
There he goes again.
Knobby tires.
But and also Christmas tree lights. We've got to get rid of those warming things, those little mini ovens that we put around our tree.
I mean, that's the fire hazard, too.
Right, and the LEDs are some more fun to look at.
They're cool burning.
And they're tiny, and they just make the tree glisten, and it's really, really nice. So, you know, that's another piece of it. Of course, you can do a solar oven and cook some of your Christmas treats with that.
If it's a clear day. Yeah.
And, you know, we hope to be doing that some this year. There's just so many opportunities here. Mm-hmm. And, of course, insulating your attic, putting a solar tube in so you can bring, you know, sunshine down into the darkness.
Those are fabulous.
You know, attic vents so that you don't overheat or underheat your attic.
Burp out that hot air.
It's just amazing. And these are just small things you can do. And, of course, bigger things, you can give your family energy-efficient windows.
New refrigerator. Upgrade that refrigerator.
Upgrade the refrigerator. Or, of course, you can get a caulk gun, and for less than $10, you can make a huge, significant change in your house by going around and finding where the leaks are.
Yeah.
And what you can do is you can get, you know, a small
blower kit to test your house?
Yeah, or I was thinking you can use a candle and find where the drafts are in your house.
Or if it's a cold day, you can just go around with your hand.
That's right, and go around barefoot because your feet are very sensitive to the temperatures. Mm-hmm. They can tell you where you know, all those huge little running cracks can be that need to be sealed.
Crawl into your crawl space. Maybe the insulation fell off your floor and, you know, and it needs to be tucked back up in there.
I mean, it's amazing. And, of course, these are gifts that just keep on giving when you go to it. So, everybody, we've been telling you about this, the price of petroleum-based fuels in the last 6 years has gone up fivefold. From, you know, the basic crude barrel went from 20 to over 100.
It hit over 100 this week?
And so, you know, that's a fivefold increase. Yet at the gas pump, because they've cut the taxes at the same time, you've only had a threefold increase. People went from $1 a gallon to $3, a little over $3 a gallon for fuel. And they're going, you know, oh, wow, this is really high. But, you know, we're subsidizing the heck out of what we put in our fuel tanks. And the rest of our society is really dependent on this blasted fossil fuel. You know, it's fossil thinking that leads to use of fossil fuel and fossil water, you know, stuff that's been put down a long time ago. But, you know, this fivefold increase means that it costs farmers more to produce food. It costs the petroleum industry more to make the plastics, the medications, the fertilizers, the herbicides. Price is going to go up fairly steep. And one of the things I've never been able to figure out is why they're not making, you know, more kerosene and cheaper. Kerosene costs as much as a gallon of diesel fuel, and there's no road taxes on kerosene. And so some of the poorest folks tend to use those little bitty kerosene heaters, and it costs a lot to fuel those things.
And it's bad air quality, too.
And it ruins the air quality, and, of course, it's just not healthy. I don't understand how, you know, a basic commodity that, you know, we know people have to depend on those in the wintertime because, you know, quote unquote, it's cheap. I think it's much cheaper to go get a sleeping bag or heavier clothing and, you know, and even do the simple insulation that we're talking about.
I was thinking about that last night out
people,
in the yard.
The poor people can't, you know, their landlords, their covenants won't allow them to, hey, we'll improve the efficiency of the house, you know, and so we get a a less than mild winter, if it gets cold, we're going to have some people suffering here, and needlessly so.
Could have had a passive solar house.
So,
I mean, if you just point the house the right direction, it's going to heat itself up.
Yeah, and, you know, and just insulation is just kind of lying all around us, and people just don't realize, you know, that. So,
heck, you can insulate with straw.
You can insulate straw, paper, you know, and treat it with just a little bit of borax, 20-mule-team borax, and that'll keep the buggies from getting into
old phone books. That's what my house is insulated with.
Yeah. But it gets calls even today.
Try to put those numbers together. For a good time.
For warmth, for happiness, and for wholeness.
That's right. Well, when you're cold, it's you know, warmth is happiness. A gold brick, it doesn't do you much good if it hits you in the head.
Oh, there goes another one.
Oh. Well, I have the story of the cruise ship that I haven't told recently that I used to discuss the economy of solar panels.
Oh, tell us a story about the cruise ship, please.
So you imagine that you're teleported to the deck of a cruise ship, and there's all these people out on the deck with little hibachis cooking dinner. It's some sort of, you know, outdoor cooking cruise ship thing. And you're going, oh, well, that's what seems to be going on. Everybody has a little stove, and their family gathered around it. And they buy a bundle of wood from the ship stewards every evening, a little bundle. And it's about $1. And you can stoke up your stove, and it's enough to cook your dinner with. And that's what everybody seems to do, except for a group of people over on one side with solar ovens. And they've purchased a solar oven, and they set that up at, you know, 10 o'clock in the morning and cook their meal, and then save it for the evening. And so there's just two different groups, the solar oven cookers and the hibachi cookers. And you've got to decide which group you're going to join. And you think, well, gosh, it's $1 a day for the wood. And how long is this trip going to last? It's going to last 50 days. All right, I'm going to be stuck on here for 50 days. And so it's going to be $50 for the wood. How much is the solar oven? They say, well, the solar oven is $100. But you can take it with you when you leave. So... So that's a benefit. And you think, gosh, $100 the solar oven and or $50 for the thing. And you're trying to decide which group to join and how you're going to survive here. But what they've left out, what you don't know is going on behind the scenes, is that they pry the wood for these stoves off the ship's hull in the back at night. So the ship stewards are back there with pry bars, prying off this wood and cannibalizing the ship itself to bring you a cheap fuel for your food in the evening. So you might not actually make it 50 days. So which is the cheapest thing to buy now? The solar oven or the hibachis? Or just, you know, get a life raft and head on off of your own. Because this thing's going down.
Going down.
Oh. But it's hard to make financial choices when the real costs of things aren't in the economy.
That's true.
We make bogus choices like
gasoline,
Hummers, and
toxic waste that you have in your portable burner,
and nuclear power.
So, yeah, I was reviewing nuclear power. It's kind of late for nuclear power, as our good friend Amory Lovin says. Nuclear power industry, it's just like trying to revive a corpse. If you sit there and stimulate it electrically, it may jerk, but it'll never come back to life. Let's hope so.